This episode of the Daily Brief podcast is brought to you by 2C Creative, an award-winning agency that crushes it on everything from 360 integrations to live action, design, trailers, and editorial.
Hello, I'm LaFern Cusack, senior producer here at Promax BDA, and this is the Daily Brief podcast. Who are you as a leader? What are your core values? How do your words and actions impact those around you? In this episode, taken from this year's Station Summit, Judy Goldberg, founder of Wondershift LTD, provides the foundational building blocks for any leader and practical tools and a few techniques that will help ignite the leader within. Here's what Judy has to say on how to launch your personal leadership.
I'm going to talk to you as I count down to success. I'm actually going to build up what I believe are the foundational building blocks for what creates success for any leader. And I work with leaders around the world, and what I will share with you today is probably not going to be anything you may have not heard before. But the biggest distinction that I usually see when I work with leaders is the difference between what they know and what they do. Anyone in the room know something about something but don't do anything with it? So we do that often. And so as I count down, I'm going to just share with you five building blocks. And I'm going to share a little bit with you. But one thing's really interesting is, as Drew mentioned, leadership is paramount of importance today. And if you look at the newspaper this morning, there's leaders in the headlines every single day. And so I was just flipping through this morning, looking at some of the leadership headlines from today. I live in the UK in London. I flew over last night and got in and had a chance to go see some of the promos this morning. But as I was looking through the news, I thought, okay, let's just hear what these headlines have to say. So I'm just going to read a few to you that I was reading this morning. Theresa May is wounded, but still walking towards Brexit. Incoming Hong Kong leader says she defers to China on missing booksellers. Prince Harry, no royal wants to be king or queen. Senator breastfeeds as she talks to Parliament. Travis Kalanick and the last gasp of Tech's Alpha CEO. Amazon's Bezos disrupts another frontier with just one tweet, the one that he tweeted about philanthropy. So within every headline and every morning, we're seeing leaders' names out there. And my question is always, when I see these headlines, who are they really? What do they stand for? How do they make their decisions? And so what I'd like to talk through today is these foundational building blocks. And I'm going to start with talking about the five core values. And these are personal core values. These are your personal core values, not your business core values. Then I'll go on and talk about four environments that all of you as leaders, as managers, as employees will find yourself in, possibly daily, if not several times a week or a month, and explain to you what those are. Then I'll go through three types of people you'll be encountering throughout your entire careers, your lives, inside and outside of work. And then we'll look at two answers that you'll be making and deciding upon every single day. And last, we'll take a look at one very important element, which is your brain, and how you use that, how you maximize it, and how your brain impacts the way you lead. So let's start with five core values. How many of you, if I asked you to write down your five core values, your personal core values, would be able to write those five words down? Just by show of hands. So it doesn't surprise me that the whole room doesn't go up. I've worked with leaders well into their 60s, 70s who are still trying to define their core values. And I would say that your core values are absolutely the paramount of what makes you make your decisions every day, whether you realize it or not. So let's take a look at this. Why core values? Number one, they unclutter your life. The more solid you are about your core values, the more uncluttered and clear you can be. Two, you'll know how to respond in tough situations. Those leaders who have core values that are solid are often the leaders who, when faced with a crisis, ride through the storm because they are very clear about what's important to them. And third is around lasting, forging relationships with those around you. So how do you determine your values? My guess is that if I asked you all to write down a list of things that you value, you might have a list of 20 things long. Right? You value your family, you value relationships, you value money, you value great travel, you value experiences. The question is, your core values happen here, where you spend your time, your money, and your energy. So oftentimes I work with people, and sometimes this is a tough one. I was working with an executive once who said that they value their family and time with their kids, and that was important to them. And I wasn't about me to disrespect or say that they didn't. I just asked questions about where are they spending their time with their family? Where are they spending their money when it comes to their kids, their energy? And it was a hard conversation, and the person in front of me started to cry. And I said, what's going on? Where have you gone to? She goes, well, I've realized that although I value them, I don't spend my time with them. I hardly get home at night to read stories. On the weekends, sometimes I feel like a third wheel in my own family, so I make up excuses to go to work. My money is mostly spent on the things that I need for work in the home, but not necessarily always on the kids. And my energy is usually depleted by the time I get to them. And so what it was a realization that there was a misalignment between what was truly probably a core value to her and where she was spending her time, her energy, and her money. And again, this could go through a lot of different aspects. One of the things that I loved, I used to work for Discovery Channel. Some of you know Discovery Channel? For 10 years. And when I signed on, I actually was interviewing with my values in mind. And so when I saw one of their values was curiosity, I was like, oh, that's one of my core values. This could be really interesting. So there was alignment around our core values, which has been what led me through my career there and staying for 10 years. So one of the exercises I always will work through with leaders is to really sit down and think about your core values. It does not happen overnight. It probably could take a year or longer. It's about recognizing what they are. So here's a little starting point. Is to think about all of the core values. So I have this value sheet. I was going to print it off and give it to you today, but I'm happy to send it to you via email after today if you'd like. But really just to think about what are your core values, and then beginning to distinguish and think about where you spend your time, your energy, and your money. And so some of these are my core values around learning. I've been in a role of learning and development. I drive that through my life. I spend my money on books, on conferences, on going to new cultures, learning about new people. I spend my energy trying to learn and share the learnings that I find from reading these books. Freedom, that could be freedom. That could be independence of when it comes to financially, freedom to travel, freedom to see the world in the way that you want to. Wellness could be, I was talking to another person once who said they really value wellness and health. And I said, okay, so you've been to all your doctor's appointments, you go to the gym regularly. They're like, well, I've been needing to go to the eye doctor. I was like, okay, how, what's going on? They're like, well, I keep squinting, I know I need to go, it's been 8 months. I was like, I'm gonna challenge your value on that, because if it's really important to you, you would have been there already 8 months ago. They went the next week and they wrote me a note to say that they went and they actually needed to get new glasses. So these things are important, but again, part of this is getting really real with yourself, really honest with yourself. And the only person that can do that with yourself is you, is to recognize where your values are showing up. So that's one of the things that we'll look at, is to look at how and what your values are that drive your decisions every single day. So the next thing I'm going to talk about is four environments that you will probably find yourself in. And some of you may be familiar with this model, some not. And what we're going to look at is, this is a model to really help us realize that situations are not all created equal, and to help us understand that there's different situations require different responses. Before I show you the model, let me just ask, just call out to me, how would you describe some of the situations or environments you're in right now at work? Difficult, chaotic, stressful. We'll say that again? Toxic, supportive. Good, I'm hearing some positive ones as well. Crazy, okay. So oftentimes we go through our careers in work. We go in day to day and we're like, oh my God, this is crazy, this is chaotic, I don't even know where to go with it. But if we actually take a step back and think about what exactly is this environment, what does it look like, it's probably more manageable than you realize. And so the four environments are these: a simple environment. And we'll talk a little bit more about exactly what this is. There's a simple environment that is usually ordered, that has a right way about doing things. Then there's a complicated environment. Also can be ordered, but you might need to bring in a little bit more experts, and it might be a little bit tougher to find the solution. There might not be one right answer. Then you've got complex environments. Also, this kind of crosses to the other side of being a little bit more unordered. Complex situations don't always have an answer that you can find in front of you. You might need to explore further. And last is chaotic. Now, if we think about some of the headline news I was sharing with you earlier about Theresa May and Brexit, for example, what environment might you say that whole situation is falling under? Chaotic, complex. Okay, well, I'm going to share a little bit more with you. What about what's going on right now? I'm supposed to leave politics on the side, aren't I? No? Okay. I'm going to pause on that. We'll keep going and we'll come back to a couple of them. But let's take a little bit of a deeper look into these four environments. So you've got ordered and you've got unordered. The simple environment are your known knowns. They're your facts. There's a right answer. There's a domain of best practice and rules that you can follow. Kind of like getting an IKEA new wardrobe, right? It's a known, it's simple, but not really. I mean, if you've ever put one of those together, it's supposed to be simple, but it's not. But there are right answers, there are facts, there is a guide, a best practice to follow. When we get up into complicated, there's known unknowns. And there's still some facts, but there's more research or things that we need to find out. There might be more than one way of doing something. And you usually get a domain of experts in to help with those. Just in this last session, I don't know if you were hearing, I was hearing the tail end of the conversation, and one of the gentlemen said he would pay $500 to bring in interns in order to get their expertise and their interest or the way that they would approach a marketing campaign. So he was talking about this could be a complicated situation, bring in a domain of experts to help give some guidance. Then you've got complex. These are your unknown unknowns. Okay, this is where you might not have facts, but you have patterns. Looking for patterns, anyone here enjoy looking for patterns? When you look at Excel spreadsheets, or you look in the news, or the Sudoku players, who are the Sudoku players out there, and the words with friends, and all of that, right? We look for patterns, we like those. And there might be competing ideas. So there's always this domain of emergence, where things are emerging, and there might be a pattern over here, something new comes up here, all of a sudden there could be a new pattern emerging that helps you move through this complex environment. The last environment then is your chaotic. You can probably imagine these are the unknowables. High turbulence, no right answers, no time to think, domain of rapid response. After I left Discovery, I was there for 10 years, I went to Sony Pictures for a year. Is anyone here from Sony? So were you guys there during the hack? Okay, so I had left about a week before the hack, came back in to finish a leadership program that I started in London. And that was chaotic, to say the least. There were lots of unknowables, there were high turbulence, there were no right answers, there were no emails that could be sent because everything ended up on the headline news. You went in, you had a skull on your computer, you couldn't access your files for 6 months, and there were people crying literally in the hallway. There was a need for a rapid response. Some people rapidly responded in a really positive way, some in a not so positive way. It was chaotic, to say the least. And one of the things that we want to do when we enter a chaotic environment is to quickly find as many answers as we can to move into another environment, to move from chaotic into complex, which eventually, 6 months on, maybe I would say, we moved into a more complex environment of how to reboot, rebuild, regain the confidence of customers, of their people, of the executives in the building, and of the employees. So, and eventually now, they're in a good place now, right? Everything's good. Excellent. So these are the environments. Here's a couple of other examples just to, before I forget, If you're not sure where you are, you're in what's called disorder, which is the scariest place to be. So the first thing you need to do when you're in disorder is to identify what environment you're in. Even though it's chaotic, at least you can identify that this is the environment you're in to help lead your people through the storm. So let's take a look at some examples here of simple environment. That could be things like changing a wheel in a car, building a fence, pruning a tree, right? Simple things that have very specific ways about doing them. Complicated could be building a car or building an office, replanting a fruit farm with new trees. Complex might be designing a new car or a new office or managing an area of outstanding natural beauty. Last week I was in Africa. I spent 3 weeks in Africa in June, and I was staying on a homestead of 600 acres that had safari animals on it, so giraffes and hippos, and you look outside and you see, they have what's called a slow safari, where you walk and you take hikes and you see giraffes and you say hello and you keep moving on. It's pretty magical. And we met the owners of the homestead and we were asking them, like, how do you manage such a place? They're like, it's complex, right? It's a natural, outstanding place of beauty, but it also has kills every night. There's unknowns that happen. There's things that happen that you can't solve. And there's interesting ways that they have to manage that in terms of keeping it a safe place for the animals, as well as allowing it a place for people to visit to take part in this magic and beauty. And then last is chaotic. And this is dealing with a multiple car crash or motorway, or dealing with a fire, or dealing with an aftermath of an earthquake. Or one of the ones I always think about too is that airplane CEO, or the CEO of an airliner, who gets that call in the middle of the night that says, one of our planes is missing. We don't know where it is. That's chaotic. Getting a call, one of our planes is missing, it's down in this area, that's complex. Okay, that's the difference of the different zones. So once you have your environment, you also then have types of people that you'll be working with. And I kind of bucket them into three types of people that you typically have in your life. And I'll look at those as the people who add to your life. They add value, they add positivity, they bring a great energy to you, and they are great to be around. How many of you work with people who add and contribute to your everyday goals, accomplishing what you want to accomplish? Excellent. And then you've got what we call diminishers. Diminishers are those that maybe aren't like the ads. They drain your energy. They dampen a mood. You can kind of feel it when they walk in the room. Anyone have to deal or work with diminishers? And they're not much fun to be around because they do impact a whole room in your energy. And the third type of person is your multipliers. And multipliers are different than adders. Adders are positive, they contribute, but multipliers are around people who you work with, who challenge you, who make you think, who make you walk away and either have to share something or go look something up or want to research something. And so if we think about leading like a multiplier, here are just a few tips to lead like a multiplier. So when you're working with your team, shift from answers to questions. The best leaders are the ones who are talking the least in the room and asking the best questions so that they can learn as they're going. To share your ideas in small doses. We all know if a leader shares their idea at the beginning of a meeting, chances are we won't hear anybody else's. We get yes people, and we don't want yes people in this world. We want challengers who continue to raise the game. It's kind of what's interesting around Jeff Bezos' recent tweet about his interest in asking the public for their ideas on how he should go about philanthropy. Did everyone see these tweets? If you haven't, it's a really interesting thing to look at because he basically went out and said, I would like to do more philanthropic work. I would love any of your ideas. I want to stay local and I want to do things that aren't long term. And the amount of tweets he got back was really fascinating, so much so that he had some young person who was written up in Forbes, I think a couple of days ago, who wrote a letter telling him he had it all wrong. But what it did is it changed his thinking. So she ultimately became a multiplier for Jeff Bezos. Also, define opportunities for people to stretch as a multiplier and give others ownership for results and success and celebrate others as a multiplier. Multipliers are not only trying to multiply the efforts of others, but by doing that, you're multiplying your own image, your own repertoire of what you have under your portfolio. So those three types of people also, one thing to consider is mapping out your network. So your network has all of these people in it, your ads, your diminishers, your multipliers. And one of the things that I would always ask people to do is to write down all the people in their world. How are they all connecting to one another? Who are the ads? Who are the multipliers? Who are the diminishers? And I ask that because the question is, what ultimately do you want to achieve? What's your objective? What's your goal? Where do you want to take yourself, your life, your business? And if you're living in a world and you recognize that 50% of the people you're spending time with are diminishers, there might be a need to change. When I started my own business, I actually did my own map of the people in my world, and I realized I had two diminishers who were consuming a lot of my time. They were draining me. When I was finished with them, I just wanted to go home and like re-energize, and I realized they weren't necessarily propelling me to go where I wanted to go. So I took a conscious effort and I began spending less time with them, and I also realized I needed more multipliers. I was really fascinated in the brain, and I thought, I want a neuroscientist in my life. Funny as that sounds, I ended up hiring someone in to speak for me for a conference I was doing, and she and I have become fast friends. So I now have her in my life as a neuroscientist, but we're also become good friends, and we've become multipliers for each other. I've created another multiplier in a futurist that I've met who always is thinking about the future. I go to him and I get him to challenge me on the way I'm thinking about something. I was having dinner with him recently and I was talking about a research project I was doing and said, you know, I'm giving myself 2 to 3 years to finish the research, write the book, et cetera. He's like, what are you doing? He's like, you don't need 3 years. One ought to do it. I was like, oh no, that's too much pressure on me. He's like, why? Why do you need 3 years? And he just kept pushing me, and at the end of that dinner, I was like, okay, so I've got 6 months left. You all are gonna help me after this. but it's great to have multipliers in your life. Again, they challenge you. They make you move forward. They have you doing things that you maybe didn't even realize you were able to do. So I challenge you all to think about who those people are in your life. So, the two answers that I am going to talk to you about, some of you might disagree. Some of you might think there are three answers. But I guess I live in a world where if you stick with these two and explain them, it simplifies everything. Does anyone know what the two answers are?
Yes and no.
Yes, yeah, see, there you go. You already know. The answers are yes and no. And how many of you have ever made a yes decision that's made someone's day? Anyone ever made a yes decision that's broken someone's day? Right? Anyone made a yes decision when you really your gut told you to say no? Or said no when your gut told you to say yes and regretted it? Or you say yes and then you realize after finding out more information you should have said no? Or you said no and then found out more information you should have said yes? Right? So what happens often is we either don't have enough information, and when that happens, instead of saying maybe, we can just say, I don't know yet. Let's get more information so that I can decide. What we often say is this, yes, but we have to be careful. Or yes, but let's look at that again in 3 months' time. Or yes, but I'm not sure it's going to work. Now think about that from an employee perspective if you're leading them. They're sitting here and they're thinking, okay, he said or she said yes, but I don't really think they want to do it, or now I'm really nervous and I'm on the line for it, because if I screw up, then I'm in trouble. So using yes, but, I would just eliminate the whole but word from your vocabulary. And instead replace that with the three letters yes and. So much more powerful. Yes, and, in 3 months' time, we can revisit this to see what this decision led us to. The other thing that we sometimes do is we'll say, not now. And that's okay too, but again, it needs an explanation. If you're not going to do something now, what they're hearing is the no. Yes, but is really kind of a no. So one of the best CEOs I ever worked with at Discovery, he was the CEO of International, Mark Hollinger. I don't know if any of you ever came and worked or met with him, but he was an incredible leader, and he used to always say, if you have to say no, explain why. So simple, but so not done regularly. And if you explain why, people understand. I was on British Airways yesterday, and I found a magazine, and I saw this quote in here. It's about some great life lessons from leaders, and it's from Chuck Todd, political director, NBC News. You all know him. I think he was here last year, wasn't he? Yes? He said, if you can do something, just say yes. Not yes, but. My dad taught me that. So great insight from him as well. So again, instead of yes or no, or yes but, or not now, use a straight yes, this is why, or no, this is why. Because wavering between the two leads us nowhere. So those are really two very simple answers for you to consider as you are posed with questions, decisions, contemplating things as you're moving through your career leading teams. So I'm going to end with the brain. We all have a brain. Out of curiosity, what do you already know about your brain? Some of you, I'm sure, know lots about your brain. What do you already know? You know that you're hungry right now, right? And so does everyone know that when your brain is hungry, you probably don't make as good as decisions as you normally would, right? Some of you have your stomach, actually. You have a brain in your stomach. And it's funny, actually, we talk about, anyone here get gut instincts? Yeah, and your gut instinct tells you, yes, no, you maybe, so where should I go? Your gut instincts, actually, your gut is surrounded by neurons. It's a neural lining that's giving you the same type of reactions your brain gets. It's why when you have a gut feeling, you should trust it. But your brain, how many of you slept, I don't know, 7 hours, 7, 8, 9 hours last night? Only a few. How many of you slept less than 5? How many of you haven't slept at all? Okay, how many of you think that's good for your brain? Okay, probably not. So your brain, it needs sleep, right? What you feed your brain feeds everything that you do. How many of you got up this morning, went to the gym, went for a run around the park? I hope not, because it's 115 degrees out, so that might not have been the best idea. How many of you feel better for going to the gym for that? Your brain is activated. So there's a couple things that you should consider in terms of feeding your brain. Number one, healthy nutrition, food and mood, there is a connection. You might be seeing that in some of the news that you're hearing about, again, I know I shouldn't go political, but the different types of snacks this president eats and the mood that we see has an impact. Same with any foods that you eat. So high carbs, all of those, high sugars, you go through spikes, you go through lows, it affects your mood. So eating whole, natural, healthy things absolutely changes your mood, absolutely changes the way you work with people. The second thing to consider is your mindset. And I don't know about you, but your mindset can tell you everything. Whether you think you can or whether you think you can't, you're probably right. I'm pretty sure Grandma Moses said that a long time ago, and she was right. Carol Dweck is another person you may have heard of. She's done a lot of research on what's called the fixed mindset and the growth mindset. The fixed mindset is living in a world of can'ts, won'ts, shouldn'ts, don'ts. The growth mindset is the cans, the wills, the shoulds, and the let's do this. And if you just consider the meetings that you go to every day and you begin to listen for those words, we often find ourselves, whether we realize it or not, using fixed language. Well, we won't be able to do that. We don't have the budget. Or I can't do that. I'm not going to have enough time. Or, you know, maybe last year we could have done it, but now it's just not going to be possible. Instead of the cans, the wills, and the shoulds of, well, we have budget enough to do this. We can do this. Or how about we try this? Or let's look at it this way. And I say this, and I focus on this a lot when working with leaders, because as a leader, I think it's important for you to pick up on the language that you're hearing from your employees and bringing them up into a growth mindset rather than down into the box with them as a fixed mindset. Let me give you a quick example. If one of your employees comes to you and says, you know, I can't do that, I don't have enough time, what's a typical response? Okay, make time. We might also ask a question back and say, why don't you have enough time? Right? And we use that same fixed language in our response to them. Instead of using a growth mindset by saying, well, what can you do in the time you have? It shifts, those little nuances in language will shift an entire conversation. So mindset is everything. And I really focus on mindset because I lived in a fixed mindset for 2 years because I had a bad hip. I still have a bad hip. But I moved and shifted from I had surgery, and I literally spent 2 years saying, I can't ski. I won't be able to play tennis again. I'm never going to be a runner. And finally, I, for whatever reason, I started working on my own mindset and said, you know what? It's a new year. I'm in Lake Tahoe. I'm with family. I'm in a safe environment. There's a beautiful mountain. I can ski. What's the worst thing that could happen? I fall and I have to get another surgery. Already done that, so I'm okay. Let's try it. So I literally flew down the mountain. It was amazing. I skied for 2 days. Then I gave myself a break. Went to yoga instead, as you do, right? But that summer, I was playing tennis again. So nothing had changed in terms of my hip except for my mindset. So these are the little things that we tell ourselves that can change everything. The next thing about your brain is practicing mindfulness. Anyone here meditate? Do yoga, Pilates, anything that kind of centers you, martial arts? All of those are types. Take long walks in the woods, on the beach, in hot air. Yeah. Okay, so mindfulness is becoming very mainstream in business today. And the reason for that is because we are often so not present with one another. My guess is that some of you have wandered, your brains and your minds have wandered outside this room since you've been sitting here. Would I be right? Yeah? Or some of you have checked your phones and you haven't heard a word I've said for some parts of this. That's okay. We know this all happens, but being mindful and practicing mindfulness means that our brains are actively alerting and present to everything going on around us, which is a pretty paramount thing if you're leading people. The next thing is sleeping, 7 to 9 hours. Sometimes we say it's hard to do, but it is absolutely critical. Kind of like when you sleep, your body reheals and regenerates itself. Your mind does the same thing. So sleep is important. And if you can't get 7 to 9 in one sleep, have a nap during the day. Some of the greatest of the world took anyone nap? Any nappers? Okay, so don't bother them if they're napping. It's good for them. Napping at work. That's why they have sleep little pods at Google now, right? You can go and nap. Physical activity. There is a lot to be said for even the 20-minute walk. Sometimes you say, oh, go take a walk, clear your head. But actually, when you are taking a walk, you're actually oxygenating your brain, and you're feeding it and giving it what it needs. So your mind does become clearer. So physical activity, again, nothing new to you, but is absolutely important. My stepfather, 76 years old, loves life, likes to drink, have a good time, etc. One of my best friends is a cancer epidemiologist and nutritionist. They were having a conversation one day, and he was like, okay, Chris, what do I need to do to like improve my life? She's like, Michael, like you gotta start exercising if you wanna live long. He goes, ugh, I'm too old to start exercising now. I'm 76, I've had a good life, it's all good. She's like, Michael, can you walk 20 minutes a day? He's like, yeah, I think I can do that. Like, just walk around the block. Okay, well, I'll try that. So I luckily was there with them for 2 weeks. So that next morning, I woke up. I'm like, Michael, let's go. He's like, where are we going? I go for a 20-minute walk. So we did a 20-minute walk together. He's like, that wasn't so bad. I can do that. And then my friend Chris came back over. Can you think you can do it 2 times a day? Well, I don't know. That might be pushing it. But sure enough, now, that was about 8 months ago. He now takes 2 20-minute walks a day, and his health and his mindset and everything has improved. Sometimes it's those little incremental things that can make a big difference. Last is healthy relationships. Now, I don't want to overstep the boundaries, but sometimes I do want to say, turn to the person next to them and give them a big hug. Because actually, I love it. Excellent. Hugging actually releases oxytocin, which is a great chemical that helps with relationships. And the more bonded and relationships and positivity that you have in your life, actually the better for your brain. It puts you into a happy state. Also, just anytime you're laughing and having a good time, you get a little bit of that happy chemical called dopamine that lights you up, that gets you excited, that wants you to feed that. All good things for your brain. And then last is learning new things. They say, neuroscientists say, that the best things you can do to keep your brain healthy and going is learning a new language, learning a musical instrument, traveling. Those are three of the best things that you can do to make sure you're engaging your brain. Just how many of you speak at least two languages? Anyone speak three? Well, I always want to get inside these amazing brains that speak three, four languages. How many of you play a musical instrument? Oh, right. I feel like we have a band right here. And how many of you have gone traveling around the world and seen different places? So you're already doing these things. Kick it up a notch for the new year. So this was a study just to prove that eating and making decisions has an impact. Some of you may have seen this if you came to my presentation last year, but I still am so fascinated by it because this is the result of, it says here, 1,117 parole board hearings in Israel prisons over a 10-month period. And what they did is they looked at what were the more favorable decisions during the time frame. And what they found is the spikes at breakfast, mid-morning snack, and lunch had more favorable decisions for those people than those when they hadn't eaten. Fascinating. So as soon as I saw this, anytime I'm looking for a decision from someone, okay, the first question I ask is, have you had breakfast? I'll catch you after lunch, okay? So if you need something from your manager or you need to get a budget or whatever it is, make sure they've eaten. It'll probably be more favorable in your decision. Just something to think about. So wake up your brain to all of these things. It'll reduce stress. You'll be more present. You can increase your attention, your focus, solve problems more efficiently. The best thing you can do when solving a problem is to take a walk, go outside, talk with other people, get different perspectives. Become an agile leader, ready for anything that comes to you, and create brain states that facilitate learning. Because in this day and age, if we're not learning, we die. If a company is not growing or evolving, it will close or get bought by Amazon. So in closing, really, I just want to make sure that I've shared with you what I believe are the five foundational pieces to building your leadership. And those are the five core values, the four environments, the three kinds of people we'll come across, the two answers, the yes and the no, and our one amazing brain that can do so much more if you feed it well with all of the great things that we've talked about today. So thank you so much for your time, your energy.
A big shout out to the sponsors of this episode, our friends at 2C Creative. If you're looking for an award-winning agency to handle all of your creative needs, from 360 integrations to live action, design, trailers, and editorial, head to www.2c.tv. Paige Albiniak is editorial director of Promax BDA. LaFern Cusack is executive producer of the Daily Brief podcast and senior producer at Promax BDA. Video helper provided the music. Digital producer Kate LaKire-Marion and social media coordinator Christian Craik contribute to Daily Brief. Follow Paige on Twitter at Paige A, follow LaFern at LaFern Cusack, follow Promax BDA at Promax BDA. You can reach out to us at dailybrief@promaxbda.org. Subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.